You're listening to Otto D, coming at you live.
Yes, which way, what, when, how? Mr. Otto D, flip the track right now.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in on this incredibly gorgeous Monday evening here in Scottsdale, Arizona. I am your host, Otto Dagnolo, broadcasting live from the Star Worldwide Network studios high above Camelback Road. And you know what? I'd like to take a second and give a shout out to Dave Pratt and the whole crew here at Star Worldwide Networks. This is an awesome facility, and being able to have my own show without building a studio and dealing with network delivery systems and integrated phone systems and marketing and blah, 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 you know, is a wonderful thing. So I'm thankful for all of you guys and the professional service you bring to us podcasting radio jockeys. So if you're listening and you want your own show, a little something fun and crazy to promote your own business, then get a hold of the guys at Star Worldwide Networks and tell them Otto D sent you and start the talking. And talking about talking, tonight my guest is an old friend, so I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about, and Arizona native, unless he's going to correct me when he gets on the mic, by the name of Ron Herndon. Ron will be with me in just a few minutes after this first song I'd like to play this evening from Brian White called Beautiful Place.
When I wanna get away, you don't have to tear my ticket, and no fare that I have to pay. And though I can't quite explain just how, you never guess where I am right now. On an island in the middle of the ocean, with palm trees and white sand, cloud in a blue sky floating by like a catamaran. Anytime I wanna be going, there's no need to make big plans. All I do is look at your face, and baby, you take me straight to a beautiful place. My daily vacation, my favorite way to escape. And there's something about getting close to you that just takes me far away. I feel the breeze on the tropical air. You smile and oh, I'm there. On an island in the middle of the ocean, with palm trees and white sand, cloud in a blue sky floating by like a catamaran. Anytime I wanna be going, there's no need to make big plans. All I do is look at your face, and maybe you take me straight to a beautiful place. Far out of reach, and the best part is you're right there with me. On an island in the middle of the ocean, with palm trees, white sand, cloud in a blue sky floating by like a catamaran. Anytime I wanna be going, there's no need to make big plans. All I do is look at your face, and maybe you take me. Beautiful place.
listening to Otto D coming at you live.
And that was Brian White from his Dust Bowl Dreams CD here on the Otto D Show, where I, Otto Daniolo, am your host. And tonight I'm chatting with an Arizona icon, a man that has played on the same stage at the very same time, mind you, not on a different day, but at the same time with the likes of Colin Ray, Kris Kristofferson, Lyle Lovett, Glenn Campbell, Huey Lewis, Kenny Rogers, and many, many others, Mr. Ron Herndon. How are you doing, Ron?
Hello, Otto.
How are you doing? You doing well?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's good to see you. It's today turned into a Herndon day for me.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, we scheduled you to be on the show. And next thing I know, a guy that you played on his record named Jay Tye out of San Diego was in town and needed to do some rough tracks for his new record. And your brother was down at my place tracking that this morning. And I'm like, I'm going to be seeing Ron later.
There you go. You got the Herndon Brothers happening.
All around me. Speaking of that, since we're already on to the Herndon Brothers, what's the Herndon Brothers and when did it start?
The Herndon Brothers Band. Let's see. Well, my brother and I just put this together recently, 1986.
Time flies. It might seem recent.
Yeah. So, yeah, 30. Well, yeah, you know, it'll be 31 years in a little while.
Mm-hmm. Now, that was a pretty, you know, heavy or big list of heavy hitters there that you've played with. So did most of that come about with the band?
No. I mean, some of it came about when I was with other people or, yeah. And sometimes with the Herndon Brothers Band, when there was only one Herndon Brother, well, that was me.
Uh-huh. But, and there was only one because your brother was out with another band cheating on you.
Exactly.
Okay. So. Well, let's go all the way back, if we could. How did this all start? Now, you are a native Arizonan, right?
I am.
I thought you were born here.
Well, yeah. Both my brothers and I are natives.
Mm-hmm. And you just have the two brothers?
Yeah.
Okay.
An older brother and a younger brother, so I'm in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And my older brother, I remember when I was younger, he and I both kind of got roped into taking accordion lessons. Somebody knocked on the front door and said, hey, we have a musical aptitude test we'd like to give your children. And they were supposed to be at least, I think, 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother, I think he was 10. Yeah, he was 10, and I was 5. So my mother begged them to give me the aptitude test, and I also passed the test.
Of course
because
you did, 'cause it's a store selling stuff.
Exactly.
Your kids are really good.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh.
You have a real responsibility here to make sure they play something.
Yep.
So did you end up playing accordion then?
I did.
Tell me about that.
I started playing accordion when I was 5 and a half years old. took lessons from a great guy, actually. He was a great accordion player. By the name of Vince Quaranta. And Vince, just out of the blue, he went, okay, 5 and a half years old, I'll do it. And was giving me lessons, and I kind of just took to it and was able to learn things pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. So, do you still ever have occasion to play accordion?
Do you
still
own
one?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
I do. I take it to the club every now and then and play it.
Well, I know that you also play accordion on the keyboard. Down these days, keyboards have all those patches.
That's a lot easier that way.
Do you pick up the keyboard?
No.
Okay.
That's the horizontal accordion.
I think that having had that experience, at least when you go to a patch on a keyboard to play a fake accordion patch, you play like an accordion player.
Yes.
It changes what you play.
Exactly. It does. It does. I noticed that, too, because I played trumpet all growing up.
Mm-hmm.
In the school band and all that stuff. So, you know, if I'm using a
this
horn
must be
patch,
trumpet month. My guest next week is a trumpet player.
Yeah.
Just started, and I played trumpet growing up.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think if you hear a keyboard player that plays trumpet, then when you're playing a trumpet patch on your keyboard, you play it more like a trumpet player.
You know what you'd play.
Yeah. So, things like that.
When did you move off of accordion, or should I say, since people generally think of you here in town as a piano player,
right.
When did you start playing piano?
I think it was about 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing, back then, I think, for the most part, I was playing almost all classical music. And I was in a lot of accordion contests when I was younger. Mm-hmm. Like, we'd go over to California, and they'd have these...
must have been before the internet, because who would have an
accordion
contest?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So... and they give trophies away and prizes and stuff. So I was in several of those.
Interesting.
And then when I moved to piano, I mean, I was playing mostly classical piano.
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad said, you know, I have a friend of mine who's an accordion player who plays jazz accordion, and I want him to teach you how to improvise and play, you know, from a fake book, right? So
interesting.
I just would have the one-note melody line with chord changes on the top, and he taught me how to read the chord changes and went through the circle of fifths and all that kind of fun stuff.
Wow. How old were you when you got this information?
About 11.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So was your dad a musician then?
Yeah, my dad played music. That's, I'm sure, I mean, he and my mom were very into music. They both loved to dance, and he played, his whole family played, most of them. And he played here in town for years, originally at a place called the Riverside Ballroom. He played there for many years.
I think that was just inducted into the Arizona Music and Entertainment Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
If I'm correct. Oh, were you at the ceremony?
Wasn't I that recent? Didn't make it.
Okay. I think Ray was there.
He was. I had to work.
Well, that was another excuse for him to not show up that night. And you have to go, you go play. I'm going to go to that party. Boy, I don't mean the bag on your eye.
No.
But, well, that's pretty well. Now, how about Rick? Rick is your older brother.
Yeah.
And Rick, I've never had an opportunity to work with. However, I've recorded both you and Ray with thousands of hours, untold hours in the studio as being some of the first call guys I call anytime I'm producing a record of almost any style with all of your background. So that being said, Rick was a musician.
Yeah, Rick played drums.
Was he ever in the Herndon Brothers band?
Well, he was in a band that Ray and Rick and I had together years ago. We just played as a trio, and we played a lot of high school dances and, you know, some little events around town.
Mm-hmm. When did he get out of it?
Let's see. Rick's been out of it for,
quite a while.
A long time. Yeah. Okay. It's been a long time since he played at church for a long time after he kind of quit playing professionally, but he played at church for a long time.
He got on the drums right from the start after passing the accordion test.
Well, he was a tap dancer.
Okay.
Rick was an incredible tap dancer. He was in also lots of contests, and he was on an old local TV show called the Lou King Ranger Show, where he won, you know, he won like this midget race car, and he was just like for being a tap dancer, right? So, and actually, I think I started taking tap dance lessons at the same time he did, but I just kind of didn't.
It wasn't your thing.
It wasn't my thing. So from the tap dancing, I think the rhythmic thing he started playing drums.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was playing with some bands when I was pretty young.
Right. So the three of you were all in a group back then.
Yeah.
That kind of came to an end. And before the Herndon Brothers, which is many years later, I would imagine you guys kept playing music, it sounds like. So what did you do? Were you in some other groups here on your own without
your
brothers?
I think the first thing I did professionally was I played the accordion in the corner of a Mexican food restaurant here in town on the weekends when I was 11 years old.
Wow, you were 11.
My mother was a server at Manuel's original restaurant.
Oh, wow, cool.
On, I think it was 32nd Street and Indian School.
Right.
And on the weekends, I'd play accordion. And Manuel would give me, every couple of weeks, he'd give me like $15.
Uh-huh.
He didn't realize I was making $60 a night in tips. So
at 11 years old.
At 11.
Back then.
Yeah.
Wow,
so I just kept putting that money away. And yeah, I did that for a while. And then when I was 13, I was asked to play the piano in a band that my older brother was playing drums for. They were losing their piano player. He was going off to college. And my brother said, well, I've got a brother who plays, but he's kind of young. He's only 13. And they were like, ugh.
They said, okay. That's a huge difference at that age.
Yeah, because they were like 18 to 20, and I'm 13. So they're like, well, okay, he can come and, you know, just try out. You know, we'll give him an audition.
Sounds like the George Harrison story.
And they go, okay, he's hired.
So right, he can play. That's awesome.
Funny thing, no bass player, but I'm playing an acoustic piano and banging bass, you know, lines out with my left hand, making my hands bleed.
Wow.
That was fun, though.
So how long did that last for you?
Well, let's see. 5-6 years.
Oh, wow.
At least. And that band was still going, I think, for a while after that, too.
So that had to be really your first real educational experience as an entertainer.
Yeah.
I mean, when you were by yourself at 11 playing the accordion in a Mexican restaurant, that was one thing, but it wasn't like you were really performing to an audience. You were just playing the accordion.
Well, because I was kind of performing. Well,
oh,
it was, yeah, I felt like it. So,
no doubt. Do you? Am I wrong? Do you feel that that performance with the accordion was really your first experience at thinking of yourself as an entertainer?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why your tips were so good.
Well, I mean, maybe even before then, because my brother would do the tap dancing thing, and he was like, I mean, he was on this TV show, and he was doing things, and they'd have these recitals, and I'd go to them, and I thought the lights that were on him and everything. So, I mean, we have old family movies where he was, you know, of him doing his tap dance stuff.
Right.
You'd see me back in the corner, and then I'd go across the stage, like, with a hat, going like,
right,
know,
just doing
like,
something.
You know, so I could
get
so
in the
audience would see me.
Right.
So that was me in the entertainment business.
All the hams in the family fighting for the attention, you know.
I guess so.
That's awesome, though. That is fantastic. So then you went on with these guys for a few years.
Yeah.
And were you singing yet? Because I know you sing with a group now, so were you singing then?
Originally, when I started with the Gringos,
That was
the name of the band when I was 13, the Gringos. And they played almost all Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass stuff, right?
So
it was a seven-piece band, you know, trumpet.
Had all those records.
Trombone, you know, two trumpets, a trombone player. And
big band.
But yeah, it was a pretty large band for us back then. So they did that, and then we started playing some Blood, Sweat, and Tears in Chicago stuff, and nobody in the band sang. So we had a manager who said, okay. He was booking us on.
Do you remember your manager's name?
Yeah, Charlie Johnston.
Okay.
Yeah, Charlie's still in town.
A lot of people know Charlie. Yeah.
Yeah, Charlie's got a big old company called Select Artist Associates. They do great things.
Cool.
So Charlie goes, we need somebody to sing. Because
horn
music
players
is,
can't do it. They're
music is changing. It's no longer all instrumental. You know, Herb Alpert's going to.
Right.
So he went and auditioned everyone to sing, and I got the job.
And you got the gig, so you became a singing keyboard.
I didn't want it. It scared me to death at first.
Did it?
Yeah, I did. My voice would shake. I was, you know, it was crazy. And then we played this concert at Grady Gamage Auditorium. I'll never forget it because, I mean, when it was a sold-out concert, the band that was playing was, now I can't even think of their name. I should know it.
Were you opening the show?
We were opening for this band, and they had the number one hit in the country at the time, called Black Pearl. I don't remember the name of the band. I can't remember
that.
Anyway.
Someone will text me.
I'm sure they will. So I remember standing up there, and I'm opening with a vocal song, and I'm going to sing first time in front of a giant audience like this. And I'm like, oh. So anyway, you can't see anything out there. When the lights come on at Grady Gamage, it's blinding, right?
Yeah,
and especially the spotlight was right in my face. And I'm like, you know, so I'm playing piano and I'm, you know, electric piano, and I'm standing there dancing and singing, right? And I'm like, oh. But, you know, I got through it.
So, was that the first time you did a big show where you couldn't see the audience?
I mean, that was really probably the first show, literally, that I sung on at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it was huge. It was a huge show.
So did you have to do all the talking in between songs?
No, they're the Checkmates Unlimited.
Ah, there you go. Okay.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. Scared me, but I got through it.
I find, you know, that's the weirdest part about doing a big theater is when you can't see anybody. You literally can't see a soul.
You're
and
all
people
alone.
People don't get that. When you tell them that, they just don't believe that that's accurate. But you are all alone. It's like you are in a room all alone, and then out of the darkness you hear applause, but you don't see anyone.
Yeah.
It's the weirdest feeling.
And then until the end when they pull the lights up, and then you notice there's all these people out there, but you can't see any of them.
Yeah,
it's black.
It's a crazy experience if you haven't had it. You also were in a couple other bands. Tell me if this was before or after the Gringos. You were in a band called Albert's Watch.
Yeah, I put a band together called Albert's Watch. My older brother was in that band with me. That was right after the Gringos. I think actually I had one of the guitar players that was with the Gringos, my older brother, and I. So I think that was also a trio. I used to kick keyboard bass a lot, so in order to not have to pay a bass player.
We do it with sequencers and computers.
Yeah, so when I was playing, honestly, with the Gringos, I finally got this Fender Rhodes keyboard bass, and I started kicking bass and playing like a Farfisa organ with my right hand. And I also played trumpet parts and sung. So
Wow,
it was fun.
That sounds like a lot of work. Now you had an experience. Was it with this band or was it with the Gringos? Where you went to Vegas and there was. I remember you telling me a story.
Oh, we were in Vegas.
I've
done Vegas things, but I think you were going to ask me about. We were in Miami actually. It was a show club at a big hotel. It was kind of like Las Vegas in Miami back then.
Right.
And we played in this show club. So you played like a 30, 40-minute show. And then another band played, and there were probably like six different acts, and they just kind of rotated you through the... So mm-hmm. we might work 8 hours a night, but we only played three shows.
Right, right, three sets.
And so we were always trying to come up with different things to do in the show, so I came up with this idea, and we all wore these suits. And
was this the Gringos?
So the Gringos. You're,
what, it was with 16, the Gringos. 17 years
old
at this
point? Yeah, about 15, 16.
Okay.
And I had these little blue glasses, kind of like the glasses you were wearing today, but they were blue. And... dark glasses and round. And I would stand in front of the stage with my arms like out and my legs kind of crossed. And I'd put my head down. And the spotlight would be on me. And they would say, I told them my name was Christopher Xavier. And, you know, people were like aghast, I think. I don't think they liked it very much.
That's clever.
But I'm like, yeah, so that was my original stage name. I kind of got rid of it rapidly.
Had that just for a minute. Huh? That's pretty funny. Had to be a pretty dramatic look, though.
That was funny.
So then you had a group called Home Cooking.
Yeah, Home Cooking. We played at a little place here in Scottsdale, right around the corner from here, called Rubens.
Mm-hmm.
And
is Rubens still here?
Rubens is no longer there. Oh, okay. There's a dinner theater right where it's at right now.
Stagecoach or mm-hmm. something? Oh, okay.
And I was there for, like, I think about 3.5 years with Home Cooking. I was going to junior college at the same time we were playing in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, growing up here, I played music from the time I was 13 until I finished junior college, like 6 nights a week playing music all the time.
It has to be amazing to think, you know, when someone who was born and then raised in the Phoenix metro area, to see what you've seen change here. I mean, this place, when I came to town in 89, it was a quarter of the size that it is now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just since then, you know. And I remember in 1989 meeting people who said, yeah, we were in Chandler. We would go to Phoenix once a month. And I'm like, once a month? People drive every day to work back and forth. It's nothing.
Yeah.
But they didn't touch then. And it was like a two-lane dirt road or something between these towns.
If we'd play from – my mother didn't – I grew up not far from here. So to play a gig either at Litchfield Park or Williams Air Force Base, it seemed like it took all day to drive there.
Right.
You know? And now it's like, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's all highway too now. A little different. Pretty wild. Well, I was thinking that we should play a song.
Okay.
That might just jog your memory and bring back, days gone by. I always ask my guests in an email a few different questions for the show, and including some of the music that they very early on that they first remember hearing or being inspired by.
Yeah.
So I wanted you to tell me a little bit about Raunchy.
Okay.
You mentioned that as being something you remembered.
Well, my older brother had the 45.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I was like 4 or 5 years old. And I heard it. I always wanted to play it. I just wanted to hear that song. I mean, something about that song made me want to play it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, at that time, I remember now when I think back, I wanted to play it all the time. Shortly after that, I'm sure I completely forgot about the song. And then when I saw your question, I started thinking about it. I thought, I remember that song. You know, there's certain songs that you remember when you're a kid growing up, like, Flying Purple People Eater and stuff like that.
So did you have the 45 then?
Yeah, well, my brother had it. So mm-hmm. I just would play it over. I probably wore it out.
Yeah.
I don't know why I liked it, but I did.
Well, let's play it now, and then they'll ask
everybody
you
will be
if
laughing.
Maybe it occurs to you today in retrospect what it was that really grabbed you. Maybe we'll find it. In fact, it's such a repetitive piece of music.
You don't have to play a lot of
it. I didn't even record the whole thing. I mean, I grabbed a piece off of YouTube. We pay a YouTube license here. Just play a little bit of Raunchy for you.
Okay.
And what was the artist's name on it? I've even forgotten.
I think Dwayne Eddy actually did it, but
I don't think this is Dwayne's version.
It may not be.
But check it out.
He might still be playing the guitar on it.
Maybe. Here you go on the Auto D Show, Raunchy.
Thank you.
listening to Otto D. coming at you live.
And that was Raunchy here on the Otto D. Show, where my guest is Ron Hernan. And Ron, do you remember that song from back in the day?
Well, I do. Uh-huh. You know, I think what I liked about it was that it was kind of raunchy. You know, it was like the guitar, the bending of the guitar, you know, the bending of the guitar thing, and then the piano play that little ding, 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 you know, whatever. You know, like
let me ask you this. Can you see the label?
I can.
What color
Very
was
colorful.
It? Was it yellow and orange? Or
yes.
Orange? Maybe it was a Capitol Records release or something. They had that yellow and orange swirl.
It was like that.
Yeah, it might have been. I remember on the 45s, as soon as you think of the song, you see that label.
Yeah, it was very colorful. I remember the swirly, colorful thing.
And you know, back in the day, what label a record was on had meaning. Today, with everybody thinks every band is on iTunes. You know, that's not even a label.
That's the label.
Yeah, and so they've kind of really lost their brand awareness in the marketplace with this new concept of one digital distributor, you know, for all of the product. But back in the day, you knew that each label had their own style, their own stable of artists that you were familiar with, and you knew you liked everybody on Warner Brothers, or you liked everybody on the yellow and orange label usually, so you'd buy those records and try them out.
Yeah.
Those days have come and gone. But let me ask you this. As a musician and you know, music lover, have you did you ever fall into songwriting?
I think at one point I tried some of it. And I wrote some like instrumental things that I thought were kind of cool, and then a couple that I started and never finished.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started trying to put lyrics to them, and for some reason, the lyrics don't come to me well. Mm-hmm. Everything turns into something you wouldn't hear on the radio.
Right. That's so. A craft, yeah.
So,
do you find that lyrics aren't as don't draw you as much?
Or? They don't. I mean, okay. So majoring in music in college, I did a lot of form and analysis work because I went to college to learn from some jazz instructors. And when I got to the college I went to, University of Miami, the guys that I wanted to learn from left. They had left the year I got there.
Gosh.
So the best musician or person I could learn from there was a classical pianist who taught. His name was Ivan Davis, very famous classical pianist. So I said, okay, well, I'll go into the classical piano performance major.
Right.
And majored in music and business at the same time, kind of. So from that, I mean, I remember arranging a whole piece, a classical piece for the marching band.
Oh,
and
wow.
So kind of arranging came to me. So I'd hear layers and I hear what instrumentation I want here and there. Lyrics, when I listen to something, even current pop stuff, and I listen to it, I try to listen to the lyrics. I've tried to make myself listen to the lyrics. I've tried to tie myself down and listen to the lyrics, and then I can't. I start hearing all of the instrumentation, and that's where my ears and brain go.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, lyrically, I mean, certain songs that I've learned to sing, I know
right.
the lyrics of those.
Right, because you have to. Yeah.
Right? But when I'm listening, I couldn't tell you what the song's about.
You know, my brother sent me a record, and it's nice to have, you know, siblings that are close to the same age, because a lot of times you don't hear what you might like on the radio and you think there's nothing new. But when you have people listening to different, you know, segments of music, you always get some ideas. He sends me records all the time going, hey, what do you think of this? You know, we trade music back and forth. So he sent me this record, and when I had a chance to listen to it, he sent me an email asking me, what do you think of that record? And I remember thinking that I wasn't a huge fan, you know, and I didn't like the production a lot. It was okay. I didn't like her voice a lot. She was okay. And I started saying these things, you know. He's like, yeah, but what about the words? And I said, I never got that far. He goes, well, what else is there?
I know.
And I'm like, holy cow, somebody thinks like that. What else is there? You mean when you tell me it's a good record, you mean you like the words? Okay,
yeah,
thank you. Now I know where you're coming from, you know?
Yeah, and I know a lot of people like that, and I'm just not. I mean, more people are like that, I think, than the other way. So.
Well, it's interesting because when you think about songwriters, a lot of songwriters, a lot of great songwriters are pretty simple musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're really writing are great stories,
exactly,
and great lyrics, and with a pretty simple melody, or maybe not simple melody, but then they are hiring musicians to flesh out that arrangement a bit and fill it up. In fact, as a producer in a recording studio, I've put you in that seat a lot of times.
Exactly.
And it'll be, you'll play the piano part, and then you'll be the one going, hey, you know, I could hear this part here or this part there. Well, you would always have ideas for strings or for organ, whether right. or not I was asking.
And that's probably my favorite part of being a musician.
Layering those parts.
Is being in the studio and doing that stuff.
Well, in the studio, isn't that critical? I mean, arrangements are everything.
Yeah.
Because the space is created by what you don't play and right. what the other guy is playing.
Right.
Finding your place.
And then you can layer all kinds of things on there. And then when you go to mix, you can take it out, bring it up. Well, you know, it's like, you know, so you can lay down a lot of ideas if you had a lot of money and a lot of time.
Yeah. Or if you just work at home these days.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You have all the
Which
time you
most
want.
Most people do.
That's very, very true. So you mentioned going to college. Did you, so you graduated or not?
I mean, did.
You are a musician,
yeah,
so I don't mean to put you on the spot with this question.
Yes, I have a degree in music from the University of Miami.
Okay, cool. And you said you also were in studying business. So is it a business major with a music minor or
it was
a music
called,
major and a business minor?
It was
minor?
Actually a major called music merchandising.
Okay.
Which was very, it was one of the two schools, I think, in the nation that
cutting
had
edge
it.
At the time.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to do it. And what a lot of people went into from that was copyright law.
Really?
Which, yeah.
So that was like the precursor to law school in entertainment business?
Yep.
Wow. You didn't go that route.
I could have gone to Cornell or Stanford and gone on to law school, but it was another extra 4 years after regular law school to get the... All the copyright stuff, and I'm like, I don't want to go to school anymore.
Yeah, you wanted to play.
Well, I didn't mind the business thing, and I interned, and I wanted to come home, so I came home and I worked for a piano and organ company,
mm-hmm.
selling piano and organs, and then I ended up running a piano and organ company of 10 stores for 5 years.
Oh, really?
But I kind of quit playing music while I was doing that, so I didn't play for about 9 years.
Wow. And is that then about the time that the Herndon Brothers Band was put back together?
Yep. Right.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, before we jump back into the Herndon Brothers Band, you know, the family has the restaurant in Scottsdale. It is the Handlebar J Bar and Restaurant.
Yep.
And the Herndon Brothers play there on a regular basis.
We do. We're there 4 nights a week.
But now you also... Yeah, I mean, the family's owned the restaurant for a long time, but it was already there originally, right? When I understand your mom went to, your mom and dad were working there, or your dad was playing there?
My dad was playing there.
And this would have been back when?
I think he started playing there in 1966.
Wow. Okay.
Something like that, or 67.
Okay.
And she started working there the year after he started playing, and they were there for about 9-10 years, and then were able to buy it after that.
Wow. So about the time you were in college, maybe? Or
I was in college when they bought it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah. And then you come out, and for 10 years you're not playing music, but they have the restaurant.
Right.
But you didn't come back to the family biz yet.
I didn't. I would go out there once in a while because there was an old upright piano, and I'd play. Ray was playing out there. He was like, I don't know, he wasn't very old.
So he was probably the band, him and, was Rick playing back then too once in a
no,
while?
No, Rick wasn't
was
playing.
Was already done?
My dad had been playing, and then he got sick, but my uncle kind of took over playing bass for him.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the band called the Country Score. And then Ray went to work out at Mr. Lucky's, and I...
Which was across town with another band.
I kind of slipped into that leader of the band out there at the Handlebar J thing with the Country Score. And then I went to work at Mr. Lucky's with Ray and Jay David and those guys out there. And mm-hmm. then Ray and I put the Herndon Brothers Band together, and now we're just at the Handlebar.
Back at the Handlebar. In the middle of all that, Ray left town and went to Nashville.
Yeah, went to Nashville.
Had a band called McBride and the Ride for a while.
Yeah.
Had a decent record.
Yeah, and he still goes out with Lyle Lovett every year in the summertime.
In fact, Lyle comes by the club when he plays in town.
Yeah, usually.
Usually comes by the club. I've had an opportunity to be up there at this cute little place and have Lyle Lovett walk up on the stage and play with you guys. And
yeah.
He always has a huge smile on his face because the band's awesome. It's all session guys.
Yeah.
A great band.
Well, about a week and a half ago, Huey Lewis came in. He got up on stage and played with us, so that was fun.
I know. I missed that. That would be a lot of fun. I saw some posts that people made.
Yeah.
And I understand that Vince Gill goes up almost after every show in town. He runs over to Hennepin.
Well, he used to.
Used to?
Yeah.
Not so much anymore?
Yeah, Ray went out and saw Vince when he was here a couple of weeks ago. He was going to try to come out, but they got too late out there in Mesa. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, there's another huge, you know, history with the restaurant, speaking of the Handlebar, and that was your mom, Gwen, who mm-hmm. just recently passed.
Yeah.
And so that was a pretty big deal. I think I remember for years going into the venue, and she would know who I was.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She knew everybody.
She did.
And she was really something else.
Oh, yeah. She best hostess I've ever known.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody always tells me that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now Ray and I are trying to do it.
Yeah.
So it's hard shoes to live up to, right? You know, walking those.
Yeah, yeah. Because it has quite a tradition. And now you mentioned Jay David, which Jay David was in a venue called Mr. Lucky's across town.
Yep.
And a whole bunch of you guys, I'll say, meaning the youngsters that were, you know, cutting their teeth in music, kind of had an opportunity to go through that venue, that place. And,
yep.
And there's a lot of history there. Waylon used to go play there a lot.
Yes.
And Jay David is still a staple in town. And now that venue has been closed for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But at the Handlebar, you guys have kind of started embracing that history.
Yeah, Jay David and Ray, I think, were talking about it. And then I started talking about it with them. We kind of put this thing together called Back to Lucky's Night once a week at the Handlebar Jay. So it's kind of, you know, and a lot of people that used to go to Lucky's come out just to hear Jay David. And,
I know.
He's
still incredible.
He is, man, you know.
And you guys have a whole horn section on those nights, yep. So the band's pretty large.
Nine-piece band.
Yeah, and the music that you play generally, I mean, on other nights, it's almost all country music, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
But on Wednesdays, it seems like you start to bring in some of that other stuff.
Yeah, a little
Chicago,
more kind of bluesy, soulful.
A few more things because of the horns.
Exactly.
It's a lot of fun. Now, who are the Rogues?
Well, the Rogues were the original band at Mr. Lucky's.
Okay, so that was the band.
And I
there.
Think, yeah, J. David Sloan and the Rogues. I think originally it was, who had the Rogues before J. David?
I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I'll remember in a second.
Okay, well, when you remember, you can let me know. Oh, by the way, Raunchy was Bill Justice.
Bill Justice, yeah, that's correct.
That was the guy's
that
name.
Is, yeah.
That was the guy's name. Now, you know, I mentioned Vegas before, and you took that to a story in Miami, which I think was the story
yeah.
I was thinking of, but I was thinking that was in Vegas. Did you ever work in Vegas?
Yeah, I worked in Vegas many times. I remember when I was probably the first time, I think I was 14, and I was with the Gringos back then. You had to have a work permit
mm-hmm.
to work there. I mean, it was unionized. You have
right.
And you also have to be 21 years old,
mm-hmm.
But I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow or another, I got a work permit. But
somehow or another.
But they found out that I wasn't 21, so it was okay, but I had to go in through the kitchen. Everybody else could walk through, you know, the front doors and
mm-hmm.
go where I always had to walk in through the kitchen.
Right.
And I was playing on the Buck Owens Review one time. And I remember my brother was playing with a band with me then. Rick, my older brother.
Right.
And we're walking through the casino, which I'm not supposed to do because I'm 14,
right.
But we walk by and I look in the lounge and there's this guy and he looks just like Buck Owens.
Right.
But it wasn't Buck. And I'm like, so I ended up meeting this guy. I just said the name on the marquee was Buddy Allen. So I'm like, so I meet him and I'm like, anybody ever tell you look just like Buck Owens? And he goes, no. I mean, right. I said, well, you know, I'm playing on the Buck Owens show. He goes, oh, you are. Okay. Well, that's nice. Anyway, I'm Buddy Allen. Nice to meet you, right? And I run into Buddy in Phoenix because his dad owned KNIX radio here for years. I run into Buddy somehow, and I said, oh, do you remember me from that? He goes, yeah. I mean, because he denied. Totally denied. So he and I laugh about that
because
still.
He's Buddy.
He didn't want to be Owens. Buck's kid.
Right.
He wanted to be Buddy Allen.
So he
Buddy
changed
Allen.
His name there to be Buddy Allen.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, the other times I played, you know, we played with Dionne Warwick.
Mm-hmm. That'd be fun.
Yeah. I mean, some fun things back there. I remember I played a show here in town with Bill Medley one time
mm-hmm.
when I was 13. I got a phone call that said, Bill Medley's piano player can't play. We can't find a piano player.
Mm-hmm.
And we know you're only 13, but somebody said we could call you. So I said, well, okay, what do I do? And they said, well, you come down to this club called JD's, and there's going to be a show, and you can rehearse with the band. And it was a pretty big band. And they had charts, and I read the piano charts and played them and played the show for Bill Medley. And he thanked me profusely. He was a great guy. And I ran into him like 20 years later in Las Vegas. I was walking into the Riviera Hotel. He's coming out the revolving door. And he stops the door and he goes, Ron, And I go, what? And I looked at him. I'm like, Bill Medley. I said, how did you remember me? Are you kidding? You know,
but
he goes, I'll never forget. You played the piano for me at that show. It was so good. And I said, you know.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. I mean, what a memory. I don't know how he. And the same, I ran into him again about 10 years after that. And he stopped me again walking down the street. Just happened to bump into
That's
him.
That's incredible.
He knew me. He's one of those guys that knows people. Lyle's like that. Lyle remembers people like that, yeah.
I'm not one of those guys.
I'm not either.
I don't remember anybody.
Yeah.
It's that.
Yeah. I mean, and you and I have worked in the studio a million times.
I still don't even know what your name is.
I go, I know what you get.
I know I recognize you.
I'm the guy that says, hello, Otto.
That's right. I knew that. See, I know you by the sound of your voice. Speaking of records that we've worked on together over the years, we've worked on, you know, to use an audio term, a crap load of records together.
Yeah. And a load of crap.
Yeah, just tons. Well, you know, I won't even go there. But and to be honest, I'd say most of them have been great.
You know, well, they all come out good.
Well, you know, and that's part of it is when you have all these professionals involved, they just make it the best it can be, you know, and polish a few things up here and there. I mean, very often I know songs are torn apart and kind of reconstructed
of
on the spot.
Of course, I mean, you and I have both better, seen you know? That, where yeah. It's like you look at something and listen to it and go, oh my goodness, this is, what are we going to do with it?
Right.
And then we play it, and it's like the best thing, it turned out better than the stuff you thought was good.
Well, you know, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, a guy that is back in town that I was working with this morning with your brother, actually, and that you're going to be, I'm going to be calling you, just
okay.
So you know, we're going to need you a little bit. Because we're going to be doing album number two. But I want to play a song from his first record, which was done about 2 years ago now.
Okay.
Now I take it back. Yeah, just over 2 years ago, because it was one of the last two records I did at Chaton Studios before we closed the doors. And so it was 2 years ago. And this is a guy who, just, you know, people understand, is a songwriter. Again, he's not a musician. He would sing his songs that he's written in his head on his phone, and he would bring them to me, he'd say, you know, and play his phone for me. And the tempo would be one tempo in the verse and then a whole nother tempo in the chorus. And I'd be like, okay, we're going to put a band on this. We got to deal with this tempo thing because that doesn't go over well. Switch it quite that much these days. And so, you know, we kind of had to rework a bunch of the songs a bit. So once we did that, and then we had the chord structures figured out because we had to get all the chords behind his melodies. Then we brought the band in and tracked him. He didn't know where to come in because he didn't know four bars.
Right.
So he was like brand new, but he got through this process with this whole album that turned out fantastic because he was a great writer of melodies and lyrics, and he was a great singer, surrounded with a great band, you know, everybody in the studio. And now he's writing, and it's a whole nother level. And I told him when we got done with the first record, I said, you're never going to hear music the same again. Now that you've watched all these layers and all these processes, now when you write, you're going to see all that in your mind, you know, and it impacts the way you write. So when you work with Jay on this upcoming record, you're going to hear some incredible new music.
Yeah.
And all the tempos are already great.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to play a song, see if you remember this cut. You played on this, and it is called Saturday Night from Jay Tai here on the Otto D Show.
Bez the only friend of mine. Now I can't do the scene tonight, but tomorrow I'll be alright. 24 hours later and I'm ready to go. Got my favorite jeans, tight shirt, it's time to roll. Grab your cash and your keys, your best pickup line. The night has begun. Alright. Rockstar, park the car.
walk in and smile. Act like we own it. Beer sounds good, but the shots taste better. It all hits the same, yes, it really doesn't matter. A few rounds of this and everyone looks better. We're gonna tear it up.
Listening to Otto D coming at you live.
Yes, you are, and I am Otto Daniolo here on the Otto D Show with my guest Ron Herndon this evening. Yeah. Ron, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you
Sounds
doing?
Sounds like an opening. Yeah. That was a fun record.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of great songs
I
on that.
I think all the songs he did were fun.
Yeah, and this new project is going to be a lot of fun as well. Did you notice the little motorcycle in the middle of that there?
Well, tell me about
it. We had this hole in the song, and it's like, we need a sound effect here. We need something big, you know, and we were talking about it, and I said, we need a motorcycle. Well, my brothers are into motorcycles. Let me call my older brother. So my brother Brian comes riding over, and I forget what he had, some big brand new thing, you know, puts it out behind the studio. I put up a couple mics, and he's like,
yeah.
And check it out. I'm going to play the motorcycle part in the middle here.
Do it.
It was a guitar dive right
exactly.
across it at the same time, yeah. You know. That's the fun thing in the studio. You're kind of painting a picture, and all those elements add energy that people don't even know what the sounds are that they're hearing.
No, they don't.
You know, but it kind of helps sell that impact you're trying to express. It's
like
a lot of fun.
You know, using big 5-gallon water jugs and thumping them and making noises. You know, it's like always fun stuff.
It is. It can be a lot of fun. Now, especially, again, if you have the money to spend in the studio to waste time. You know? And what's funny is I've been on records where they rent the studio by the month, and so they have the time to waste.
Yeah.
And other times where the band shows up with a list from 10 to 10:10, we're going to do drums at 10 to 10:15.
I know.
And they really break it down for you because they have a goal and not a lot of money to spend. It makes it harder to be creative. I want to get back to this list of people that you've played with real quick, like some of these guys, Joe Nichols, Chris Christopherson, Lyle Lovett. What are some of these stories? I mean, I know sometimes you guys would play the golf tournaments here in town and back, some of the bands who would come through town.
Yeah, there used to be a golf tournament every year. It was a celebrity golf tournament, and the guy that put it together from Nashville, he recently passed too, but he would call me to put a band together to back up however many artists were going to come out and play in the golf tournament, and then they would do a concert at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, a lot of people have been through there. I mean, Kenny Rogers was through there, Clint Black, Toby Keith. I mean, mm-hmm. I met a lot of people doing that. Colin Ray. I mean, just a ton of people who had hit records,
mm-hmm.
and they would just come out here for that celebrity golf tournament, and it was a charity event, always at Greyhawk, if I remember correctly.
Right.
So that was always a fun thing for me to do, because to sit down and arrange all the music and mm-hmm. give it to my guys. And yeah, you know, we would rehearse it, and then we'd go there and you'd basically just have to play it with these guys. You know, we didn't have time to rehearse with the artists themselves.
Right, they just walk up and
so
play
they relied on us knowing their songs.
They must have loved it.
They did. You know, they're like, wow, nobody does this for us anywhere. So, you know, that was a really fun thing for me.
Very cool.
I liked it.
Now, you're an avid golfer, too, aren't you?
Well, I don't know about avid. I love to play.
Okay.
But I don't have as much time to play as I'd like to. And
well, they say a lot of business happens on the golf course. Do you ever cut any deals in the music business on the golf course?
I've not really cut any deals, but I've met some people who were interesting, people who were in the music business
mm-hmm.
That either owned recording studios or knew some big producers that I'm
right.
really, you know, so that's kind of interesting. But
kind of fun.
Yeah.
Any other hobbies besides golf and music?
Water skiing. I shoot a lot of pool. Or mm-hmm. used to.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of, that's the way I made my extra money in college was playing pool.
Right. So you're not married?
No, not right now.
But you've been, I was going to say not right now.
No.
Every 30 minutes or so that
changes. Yeah, no.
No. No. But you've been married?
Yeah, I have. I have two kids.
Two kids? So what are they in town?
No, my daughter's going to med school here, and my
awesome.
Son lives in Hawaii.
Wow.
On the island of Kauai.
Of all places, what's he doing? Is he playing in the bar?
No, he sets up large event tents. He runs a company that does that, and he owns the company that has the generators that supplies the electricity, and he has the light company that does the lights.
Wow.
So he's very busy.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
So if you ever want to put a show on in Hawaii.
In Kauai, just call Rick.
You know
call
guy.
Aaron.
There you go. Well, what's coming up for the band? Anything big? You leaving the restaurant for any big gigs? Because I know sometimes you guys go off and do different things.
Well, we do things outside. We don't always go a long way.
Right.
I think on the 23rd of April, we've got a thing coming up at the Sanderson Ford Pavilion thing up in Carefree.
Mm-hmm.
It's a free concert. I think it's from 1 to 3 in the afternoon.
I think I just saw a post about that.
Yeah. So, and that's always a fun. We did it last year. That's a fun thing.
Okay.
It's really neat. Weather's usually beautiful, and it's
oh, yeah.
kind of a nice area. But we go and do things like that. I mean, you know, certain, I think we're playing a party somewhere on Easter Sunday. But you know, we're not always at the club. We try to get out some.
And as to for the club, how often is there music at the club?
Six nights a week. We're closed on Monday nights, but there's music every other night.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to get different bands in there on Tuesdays and Sundays. And then we are the house band.
So the Herndon Brothers are usually
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Okay.
And the Back to Lucky's night is Wednesday. So, yeah. And we've been doing early music on Sunday, like 4 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
Friday nights, we do, there's music on the patio from 4:30 to 7:30, and then we start inside at 7:30.
They still do the free line dance lessons up there?
Well,
used
they
to
do.
That,
they
you?
Do free two-step lessons every Thursday and Saturday.
Oh, that's what it was, two-step
yeah.
lessons.
But
there
yeah.
you go, kids.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you notice when you go to someplace like the Handlebar J that all the girls want to dance and all the old guys are dancing with all the women in the house because they know how to dance and all the young guys are standing around watching everybody
yeah.
dance.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's interesting that you guys offer free dance lessons up there.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
It is cool.
So what else you got going on?
Nothing.
We're done? We're
no,
caught
we're not done.
We're covered?
No, I have another story I have to tell you.
Oh, what story?
Well,
I was about to start the ending music.
Well, don't start it yet.
Okay, I'm waiting. My fingers on the space bar.
Okay, well, no, some people that I've met playing music, and I've met a lot of famous people, but I've never been one to take pictures with them and put them on my walls and stuff,
yeah,
which
I
kind of wish I had. But one of the things I remember for sure.
I felt it was too intrusive.
I always have to tell everybody, which I want everybody to know this. Jose Feliciano, the band I was with, was playing at the L.A. Forum.
Mm-hmm.
And Jose liked me for some reason. I was a kid. And he said, well, come in my dressing room. And I watched him put new strings on his guitar in about 2 seconds. And he's blind, right? He takes the old ones off and restrung his guitar and tuned it. I swear it was like 20 seconds for all six strings. And
wow.
I'm like, I was in awe. And then this girl comes in from the Los Angeles Times to interview him. And I said, okay, thanks, Jose, for inviting me in. And, you know, nice to meet you. He goes, no, stay here. I want you to stay here. Stay for the interview. I said, okay. So I sit on this giant couch, and he's behind this big desk. And the interview lady comes in, and she sits down in this little chair. And she goes, first question she asked him is, Jose, have you been blind all your life? And he goes, not yet. And I'll never forget that.
That's a great answer.
I'll never forget he said that. I almost fell off the couch.
Wow. That's a great line.
So, you know.
So did it come up in the interview that he did that to his guitar so fast? Did you throw that in?
I didn't. I think right after that, I was flabbergasted. I got up and I think I just went ahead and said, I got to go to, we're doing sound check or something.
That's pretty amazing. So, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. It's fun.
Well, listen, thanks for sharing some of that stuff with me.
Thanks for having me.
And I look forward to getting you on Jay's new record. It's going to be a lot of fun. I have a chance to work together again.
You have my number.
I have your number. I have your email. And although you are never on Facebook, so that's hard to hunt you down there, but I can still get you through the restaurant.
All right, Otto.
All right, my friend. You take care.
You too.